will start the day with some community announcements. I was reminded, we had a Candlemas service last Sunday, and we were talking about the changing season and the time of the year, and I was reminded that this is the time of year when the bears have their cubs. And I just thought that was an interesting thing to ground us in the changing of the season. So that's the first announcement of the day. The second is that we have some fabulous artwork that was done by Sharon Handy, who borrowed us these paintings for our service today, and she is unable to be here. But when she saw that I was speaking about wisdom and Sophia, she said, I have been doing an exploration of Sophia and woman wisdom, and I have these paintings. And she sent me some images, and I asked her if we could borrow them for today. So Sharon Handy's work is with us, even though she is not. We have a couple of announcements for upcoming events. So next Sunday, February 16th, the UU women will gather at Cafe Coco at 10 a.m. The following day, Monday, February 17th, at 5:30 p.m., the Social Justice Committee will be meeting. And cookies and coffee will be provided, and people can get a meal and have it, will be in the meeting room. 5:30 p.m., Monday, February 17th. So a week from this Monday is the Social Justice Committee's meeting. The following Sunday, Mary Doherty, February 23rd, Mary Doherty will be our presenter, and she will be speaking on Earn Your Name, Caring for the World Within Your Arm's Reach. And just going way out there, all the way to March, on March 1st, the other Sunday, I'll call it our Roots Sunday, where we get together and have a teaching and discussion together, we are going to talk about caring for one another, a multi-faith, intergenerational approach. And so especially those who are interested in the caring committee or have thought about how do we care for each other in this community, we'll open up some space to do that work at that time. So that'll be our other Sunday. Are there any other announcements? Oh, and I should mention that if you're interested in the Social Justice Committee meeting, that one's going to be specifically on the Border Justice Coalition, and that you should contact Diane Cousin for additional information. And Diane, can you raise your hand just so people... There's Diane. And then, please remember to vote for the special election for Sean Duffy's seat in Congress. It's on Tuesday, February 18th, a week from this Tuesday. It's a very important election. And, of course, we've got a couple of candidates running for that election, and it's a special election for Wisconsin. So, a reminder to get involved and vote. Without further ado with announcements, I am pleased to announce that Glenn Walker Johnson is here this Sunday. He's been here before, but we are extremely excited to have him back. And so as we move from arriving to our service to being present in our service, I just welcome you to take a deep breath. Rest your eyes or focus on something in the space. And center yourselves while Glenn Walker Johnson provides music to begin our time of reflection and inquiry this morning.
Thank you. We gather together this hour as people of faith with joys and concerns, gifts and needs. We light this beacon, calling us to our search for truth and meaning, celebrating the community we share. Our chalice reading today is Hagia Sophia by Thomas Merton. There is an invisible thing, There is in all visible things an invisible fecundity, a dimmed light, a meek namelessness, a hidden wholeness. This mysterious unity and integrity is wisdom, the mother of all, mature in the trans. There is in all things an inexhaustible sweetness and purity, a silence that is the fount of action and joy. It rises up in wordless gentleness and flows out to me from the unseen roots of all created being, welcoming me tenderly, saluting me with indescribable humility. This is at once my own being, my own nature, and the gift of my Creator's thought and art within me. Speaking as Hagia Sophia, speaking as my sister, wisdom. I am awakened. I am born again at this voice. My sister, sent to me from the depths of the divine fecundity. And we will now sing our song of the day. It's number 123 in your books, Spirit of Life. And we are going to sing it through twice so that you can figure it out the first time.
This is a time in our service where you're invited to light a candle for a joy or a concern in your life. So please come forward and tell us your name and talk into the microphone so we can hear you. I'll light the first candle, and it is a really big joy in my life because I have a new plow guy, and he actually comes, so I'm standing here to say hi to you guys and not shuffling. Yeah, it's a joy.
Uh, I have a candle of several joys. This week it is my birthday. It is my sister-in-law's birthday. And 30 years younger than me is little Vera Stevenson over there, is turning 2. I won't give away my age or Emily's age.
My name is Joe Bailey and my husband Mike, and we are famous for always being late. So I have a joy. This is the only place you can come to church where you see maybe 15 people running in at 1 minute to 10. And I see that the clock doesn't move, so I like this place.
We have 2 candles. One is for my grandfather who passed away last week, Gerhard Overmeyer. Even though he was 98 and a half years old, we were not ready. He died exactly 1 year after my grandmother to the day. And the other is a joy for Mirabelle's birthday tomorrow. I have a candle of joy because of this last week's winter weather. It was perfect temperature for winter, enjoying the winter, and it was sunny much of the time. And so that's my joy.
I have a joy for being able to speak here today, which I'll be doing directly after this.
Gwendolyn's going to light a candle of joy because she has gone skiing now 3 times at downhill, and she can go down the entire way by herself on a blue. So I'm a proud papa.
Hi, I'm Jan Perkins, and I'm going to light a candle of joy for 2 things. One for February. I love February when the days get longer and the temperatures are milder, and you know there's still stuff coming, but you just kind of feel like you turn that corner. And the other joy I have is that now I'm pretty much done being the executor of my aunt's estate. People may remember 2 years ago, January, my Aunt Julie passed away suddenly at age 87 in West Virginia. And I was her executor for 18 months from 4 states away with 8 beneficiaries scattered from coast to coast, north to south. And now my duties are ending, done legally, and I have my whole bed has photographs from all the way back in the 1800s to like maybe the 1970s of all my family's photos. And I'm packaging them up and sending them away to people. And also I retired as a nurse after 38 years, just 2 years ago, February. So I feel like in many ways my life is just kind of turning the good corner and moving on.
I've got a candle of joy this morning as well. Last night there were quite a few of us in this room that enjoyed a concert at the Presbyterian Church. The Shawamigan Bay Area Chamber Music Society presented a wonderful evening of music, and there were Joni Chapman, Linda Callen, two of our members who were performing, Scott Burchell, Kathleen Broadwell. Yes, Scott, Kathleen, and there's a third that also participate in our group periodically. So just a big presence by members here of our UU fellowship, and wonderful evening.
And so now we light the very last candle for those joys too private and sorrows too deep to share. Please join me in a moment of silence.
So this is the time in our service when we sing our youth out to religious education. We're going to switch it up a little bit today, so listen carefully. We are going to walk down the middle of this space here, which means people are going to need to get up out of their seats on their own volition and come to the middle to make an arch to walk our or to welcome our youth out to their... You know. There we go. You guys are great.
Welcome Callie Sipp back to lead us in a responsive reading.
Thank you for having me. So
If you go to your pamphlets, you should be able to find the reading, and we will proceed from there. We gather as Unitarian Universalists to understand, articulate, and live our liberal religion. David brought down the giant Goliath with 5 smooth stones, but we use our 5 smooth stones to build more just, loving, and free world. Our second stone reminds us that we freely choose to enter our relationship and community with one another. Our third stone reminds us that we have a moral obligation to work towards establishing a just and loving community. Our fourth stone reminds us that good things happen as a result of human effort. Our fifth stone reminds us that the divine and human capacities for achieving meaningful change are reason for optimism. The roots of our living tradition have been developed over centuries, but new ideas and understandings are still being revealed. We are part of this living tradition. Through it, we become whole, and through us, our tradition becomes whole.
Our reading today comes from Proverbs, chapter 8, verse 30. I was there. I, Sophia, was by mystery's side. I was the artisan, artificer, master builder, delighting God day after day, ever at play with everywhere in the world, delighting to be with the children of the earth. I now welcome Stacy Craig to provide today's message, who is Spirit Sophia, Ancient Wisdoms, Ancient Expressions of the Divine for Today's World. Thank
you. Good morning. My first exposure to Sophia was at a conference on embodiment at United Theological Seminary of the Twin Cities, where I'm a student. I was experiencing one of the many outcomes of the Reimagine movement. In 1993, a conference called Reimagine came together to explore women's experience in communities of faith. The explosive backlash, which included hate mail, accusations of heresy, job losses, and even death threats, is what's credited with creating a movement out of what was supposed to just be a one-time conference. Gender equality became part of the international conversation. And for many women, their experiences with inequality, especially in the Christian church, was affirmed on a global scale. So this became a space to reimagine theology based on the liberation of women and the planet. Over the course of 10 years, 6 more conferences would take place. Through ritual, song, and lecture, the conferences provided the invitation for all bodies to be part of the worship experience. Their manual for worship is called Bless Sophia. And we were singing this song from this collection of teachings, and it's called the Sophia Blessing. And so I was standing there, and I just happened to be in this group of all older men. And we were singing this song together. Bless Sophia, dream the vision, share the wisdom, dwelling deep within. And we chanted this several times. times, and I looked around and I thought, who is Sophia? What are we talking about? So thus started my quest, my curiosity to learn about Sophia, which is the Hebrew feminine term for wisdom. Gnostic texts, the Hebrew Bible, and theologians such as Elizabeth Johnson all reference Sophia extensively. Yet for many, like myself, she is a mystery. Elaine Pagels, historian and just brilliant writer, wrote the Gnostic Gospels in 1979 about her interpretations of the Nag Hammadi texts. Those were the texts that were found in that clay vessel that were buried in a field in Egypt that were recovered in about 1945. In her chapter, God the Father, God the Mother, she explores the characteristics of Divine Mother that are found in these ancient texts. The texts propose that God is a dyad, consisting of the ineffable, depth, the primal Father, grace, silence, the womb, Mother of all. Prayers to the Mother include things like being addressed to mystical, eternal silence. A second thread in the text that she identifies is that the Divine Mother is known as Holy Spirit. And for those who may be familiar with the Christian notion of the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, you may be familiar with that idea of the Spirit being in the world. In the Greek terminology, which is what the New Testament is written in, the word pneuma is used, a neutral term that implies non-gender. However, in the Gnostic texts, the Hebrew word for spirit, ruach, is used, which is the feminine, and that's what it implies. The Trinity is thus masculine, feminine, and child. In addition to the eternal mystical silence and the Holy Spirit, a third characterization of the Divine Mother is just known as wisdom, or the Hebrew word Sophia. This Hebrew term Sophia, wisdom, is found in several places of the Hebrew Bible as well. In Proverbs, wisdom is personified as a woman who speaks as God or as a prophet. Is complex, but in one area, wisdom Sophia describes herself as preeminent to God in Proverbs 8:25. And in wisdom, Sophia, in other words, exists before God and even before creation and was present during creation. Proverbs 8:27. Wisdom Sophia is found in similar ways throughout the Hebrew Bible as present among all generations and accessible to all who seek her. She is especially present in the wisdom of Solomon, which is not in the Jewish Bible, the Tanakh, but can be found in the Roman Catholic and Orthodox Bibles, and it is considered a part of the Apocrypha in Protestant Bibles. So within that Wisdom of Solomon chapter, woman wisdom is characterized as granting immortality, saving the righteous, and being the source of all good things. So in both the Gnostic texts as well as the Hebrew texts, we have a female divine figure, Sophia, woman wisdom, who pre-exists creation, and then creates or co-creates the world and is in the world. An early Gnostic theologian, Valentinus, developed myths about how Sophia, woman wisdom, enlightens human beings and makes them wise. Yet, right after he did this work, around the year 200, virtually all of the feminine imagery for God would disappear. And that's when essentially Christianity became associated with empire. The Gnostic writings disappeared as well. Some to be hidden in places like a clay vessel, buried by someone who believed that that wisdom would be important for the future. For almost 2,000 years, the rich imagery and tradition of woman wisdom was starved from the Christian tradition, a tradition that profoundly shaped and and continues to shape the world, with mainly male imagery for the divine, which is then reflected in the patriarchal structures of most churches and societies. In 1993, Catholic nun and feminist theologian Elizabeth Johnson wrote this beautiful book called She Who Is. And that's actually a term that's found in the Gnostic writings. Johnson was part of the second wave of feminism in Jewish and Christian communities that was trying to free their tradition from patriarchy and sexism and androcentrism, which means the privileging of masculine or male-centered traits. Johnson uses the lens of Sophia, woman wisdom, to reconstruct the doctrine of God as the female personification of God's own being in creating and saving the world. Johnson, as well as many other theologians, interpret the New Testament in the Christian tradition as the coming of Sophia, woman wisdom, incarnate on earth in the body of a man, Christos Sophia, Jesus Christ. Johnson believes that to speak of God is to speak of the ineffable, transcendent mystery. And if this is the case, then we have to recognize that male symbols for God have a history. They come from a place and time. They were constructed. And these symbols matter because Johnson claims that this construction has reinforced sexism in society and subordinates women. But even more so, her concern is that it shrinks and shrivels that divine mystery. It starves the divine mystery of its fullness by reducing it to a single metaphor. One of the areas Johnson focuses on in her work is Spirit Sophia, this notion of woman wisdom as Holy Spirit that, again, we find in the ancient Gnostic texts as well. Elizabeth Johnson works to reimagine a particular kind of relationship in the Christian language of the triune God as a community of equals. In her analysis, Johnson states that the spirit is mediated by three things: the natural world, personal experience, and relationships. Spirit Sophia is the teacher for justice and courage, even though human effort is responsible for making justice happen in the world. And Spirit Sophia is in the world, mediating the divine throughout history, but is not bound by the world. She is something cosmic, eternal, and yet as close to you and I as our breath. That is Spirit Sophia, or what I've discovered so far of her. And she has been somewhere in people's expressions of the divine for thousands of years. Now, I often refer to the divine as she to create space for more expansive symbols and imagination in a world that almost always uses male pronouns for the divine. But the goal of this historical and theological work is not to replace a male deity with a female deity. Elaine Pagels concludes that the Gnostic Gospels present a masculo-feminine image of the divine, androgynous, both, one that possesses both masculine and feminine elements. So the ultimate goal is to be liberative, to allow for all human bodies to have equality and to move towards flourishing with the body of the earth. And that is why I believe our symbols and models and language around gender matter. So I grew up in South Dakota, so I don't think anybody here today knew me when I was young. And I haven't really talked much about this part of my life, but I was what they would call a tomboy back in those days. Now, I have this like thick, curly hair, which dreads and knots really easily, and I hated having my hair combed. So my older sisters affectionately referred to this as the rat's nest. My hair got shorter and shorter and shorter until essentially I just wore it above my ears. And I was involved in sports. I think I was involved in like all of the sports that exist. And so I was suntanned and scraped up all the time from playing outside. And I can't tell you how many times I would be somewhere with my mom, the grocery store, the mall, a park, and she'd be talking to someone and they would look at me and say, "Oh, and what's your son's name?" Now, at first, I got embarrassed when this happened, and I even felt ashamed, like I was somehow not right. I didn't fit who I was supposed to be. And it wasn't only the way I looked. It was the way I felt. I just liked all the things that the boys in the neighborhood liked. I remember one fall evening, I got to go on the bike ride. Now, this was when like all the neighborhood guys would take their bikes and they would ride somewhere. And I went with them this one day, and I found out that they were breaking the sacred rule of South Dakota, which is they were biking to the edge of the farm field, which is right outside of our neighborhood, picking ears of corn from the farmer's field and taking the corn off the cob. You don't do this, right? That is like the food, right? That is like what the farmers do. We knew it was wrong. And so we were like biking back, all, you know, kind of sneaking back. And because I was with the guys, people were out looking for me. They thought I was lost. They had not thought for one second that I would be with them. So all the parents are out there, "Where were you? What were you doing? Show me where you were." Yeah, we got busted for wrecking some corn cobs. And I was never invited back on the evening bike ride. But I can still remember that night, that feeling of feeling like I was where I belonged. Now, of course, my mom, she battled my nonconformity. She dressed me in nice clothes and shoes, carefully worn and taken care of by my two older sisters, and I wrecked them. Not on purpose. It was just me being me. I was running around outside playing, getting things totally grass-stained and broken. I was always a little bit of a mess. I was, and still am in a lot of ways, what people would call gender nonconforming. Now, gender and biological sex are two different things, right? I think this is pretty well known in our day and age. We can be biologically or anatomically male or female, but gender, that which defines our social roles, may be more fluid. Gender nonconforming, gender fluidity, and gender non-binary are all terms that I learned here at Northland College several years ago when our kind and brave students helped me to learn to say the pronouns they, them, theirs for people who didn't identify as male or female. And it was also at Northland as a student when I truly learned to love my nonconformities. In this beautiful gender-blending community where, at least in my day 20 years ago, all of you, especially the nonconformities, was accepted and loved and affirmed. Today, I go by the pronouns she, her, hers. But given who I am, this blending of my experience and my being, I am also really comfortable with the pronouns they, them, theirs. And one of the things I've been noticing recently is that my naturalist friends and my theological friends have been writing about the use of they, them, theirs pronouns and how by identifying as an individual, as they, we acknowledge the radical interconnectedness of our beings. For my naturalist friends, by referring to someone as they, we acknowledge their full gender, but also that they are water, that they are the last meal they ate, that they are air, that they are physical matter and biological processes, cell respiration and the firing of neurons. By saying, "This is Stacy Craig, they are from South Dakota," we unconsciously capture the complexity of our beings. For my theological friends, referring to someone as they allows for the inclusion of being an individual that is also perhaps one with spirit, or put in another language, one with love. There are people who prefer the pronouns they, them, theirs, even for the divine, to try to capture this expansiveness. And I would suggest that they, them, theirs, for the sacred, may be a way to affirm our Unitarian instinct that we are part of an interconnected web of life that includes animate and inanimate beings, human bodies, air, water, trees, and animals. For centuries, the dominant world power has held a view of man or humankind over nature. This includes a duality of the spirit and body, that we have a superior eternal spirit trapped in this corrupt, lustful, material body. There's a great essay called The Historical Roots of Our Ecological Crisis, written by Lynn White Jr. in 1967. In that essay, he explores the historical threads that have led to environmental degradation, and he writes, "What people do with their ecology depends on what they think about themselves in relation to the things around them. Human ecology is deeply conditioned by beliefs about our nature and destiny. That is, by religion." Let me read that one more time. What people do with their ecology depends on what they think about themselves in relation to things around them. Human ecology is deeply conditioned by beliefs about our nature and destiny. That is, by religion. So who is Spirit Sophia? For me, she is an invitation to connect to thousands of years of reflection on how we have related to the divine, to our bodies, and to the body of the earth. The research, writing, and rituals around Sophia, woman wisdom, have re-entered the world at a time when I would argue we need a deep and powerful way of connecting with our bodies and this world we live in. That human ecology. This planet that we have mapped from edge to edge, explored from mountaintop to seashore, from the bottoms of the sea, this miraculous system that provides abundantly for life to flourish, we know it. And yet it seems that we just continue to look for home in outer space, in Mars, perhaps in the next life. As I was writing this for today, I kept thinking about a revival where we would go for a day of singing and drums and community gathering to get a little spiritual. I know that our UU communities don't tend to do this. We likely get more spiritual over a few rational discussions. Yet I hope today that you feel this invitation, an invitation of revival. To feel that all bodies are welcomed and honored in the sacred. Receive the invitation to participate in the interconnected web that can include all parts of you. When you become they, when we fully connect, it is there that we find the sacred. And why I think this is utterly important. So important that I've suggested a UU revival, is because I believe that a liberative, earth-based, embodied theology and understanding of the sacred is one of the only ways that we can adapt and endure a changing climate. The time has come to live as one. So bless Sophia. Dream the vision of the wisdom dwelling deep within. Thank you. Let's sing a song. Please rise as you are comfortably able to join in singing number 90, From All the Fret and Fever of the Day.
I'm going to play it through one time since I'm not sure how familiar we are with it.
seated. We've come to our time and offering, and one thing I talked with the RE group about was we are going to try to coordinate it so that the young ones come back for our closing circle. So could I have two volunteers, one go upstairs and one go downstairs, to let the RE folks know that that they can come back in about 3 minutes, if that works for them. I know they're doing a craft today. So we've come to our time of offering, and your gifts help support the work of this fellowship here as well as in the community. And I invite you to enjoy some special music from Glenn Walker Johnson as we pass the baskets. Having you here, Glenn. And I understand that you're going to be playing at the Bistro on Valentine's Day, so maybe people can enjoy you there. Okay, so for our closing song, now this is totally challenged by choice, right? I was trained as a Northland College outdoor educator, which means that you participate when you feel like it's right for you. But I would like to invite you to participate in the Sophia Blessing, the song that I talked about at the beginning. And so if you'd like to just stand up. As you're forming the closing circle, that there's fellowship after the service, and everybody is invited to stay for snacks. And also, I wanted to mention that Jackie Ray Ladine is a point person for our care committee. And so if people have cares or concerns that come up, Jackie's here for us, as well as I am here for you as well. So with that, I invite Aaron and William to extinguish the chalice.
As we extinguish the candle and prepare to depart, remember that each of you is the living light. Carry the beacon of love and justice in your hearts and into everything you do. Our final reading is from the Tao by Lao Tzu. Before creation, a presence existed, self-contained, complete, formless, voiceless, mateless, changeless, which yet pervaded itself with unending motherhood. Though there can be no name for it, I have called it the way of life. Perhaps I should have called it the fullness of life, since fullness implies widening into space, implied still further widening, implies widening until the circle is whole. In this sense, the way of life is fulfilled. Heaven is fulfilled. Earth is fulfilled. And a fit person also is fulfilled. There is the four amplitudes of the universe, and a fit person is one of them. People rounding the way of the earth, earth rounding the way of the heaven, heaven rounding the way of life, till the circle is full.
And it is our tradition to speak our blessing to each other. And the blessing goes like this: May love abide between me and thee, while we are apart, one from the other. Join me. May love abide between me and thee, while we are apart, one from the other.